That music was by Annette Cohen, Purple Peace, from the album Poetica. You're listening to VBS Radio. I'm your host, Sherry Edwards. The show is Sound Health. We've been with VBS for over 2 years now, and we love Don and Seth and the gang. Thanks for being there, guys, and we'll send you peace and love and trying to get the station working again. I know you'll just sail through it. On this show, we attempt to bring you information and ideas that will assist you in your quest for freedom to be who you are with grace and integrity. And we thank you for joining us. Today, our guest is an author of a very enlightening yet peaceful book. It's kind of an odd read. It's exciting and it's peaceful and it's challenging and it's full of integrity. It's called The Promise, and we'll be with Therese Tapuni in just a minute. Boy, what a wonderful name, Therese Tapuni. We'll be with her just after these few announcements. Okay, first announcement. In the last few days, we've had many inquiries about the frequencies of love and gratitude and bonding, and we discussed this before when we did a program called The X Factors of Life. But we'll be doing another show because you requested it. We love hearing from you. Check out our question, the expert sections of BBS Radio. You just go to bbsradio.com, and on the left side, question the experts, then go down to my name, and there you'll find a lot of things posted there that you guys have asked about. We have posted some new information, the keynote for May, and it's a bit about loving and sex. We didn't mean it to match, but it just does. Maybe that's where this question about frequency came from, and I'll write that up for you, and we'll post it. Okay, two. Thank you, Allison, for your request about the little girl who was poisoned by formaldehyde and had forgotten how to read. That's the one where the teachers were treating her horribly, and she was being blamed and embarrassed at school. We posted an article about this because we've talked about it on one of the shows, and the article is called Mommy, Why Do I Feel So Dumb? So you can get a copy of that from our clinical website, NutraSounds, N-U-T-R-A, sounds, that's plural, .com, or just by writing me at Sherry, S-H-A-R-R-Y, at SherryEdwards.com, or just call the office, 740-698-9119. And tell them that you would like to have a copy of that article, Mommy, Why Do I Feel So Dumb? Most of you know that I run a research center here in Ohio and that we investigate the use of sound and frequency as it influences health and wellness and how we can use that to entrain our brain. Andy's story, she's a little girl in that article, Mommy, Why Do I Feel So Dumb, is one of our success stories, and I certainly appreciate your interest, Allison, in our work. And for those who would like to know more about our research, there is a free online journal. It's the Journal of Bioacoustic Biology, and it's jbab.org. That's like Justice Bad Apple Boy. Some of you have asked, and my next public appearance is in Chicago on June 27th through the 29th at the Renaissance Schomburg Hotel. You can just go to healthfreedomexpo.com. All the information is there. I won't repeat everything and who's going to be there. I'll be doing a presentation on frequency as a new drug or an ancient mystery revealed. So we're going to talk about that through the ages and how you can use it in your life. There has been such a response from our offer about classes here at Sound Health and teaching you guys how to do some of these techniques. And we have received some matching scholarship funds. So if any of you are interested in taking classes with us, you can jump onto that NutraSounds.com website or call Heather, H-E-A-T-H-E-R. She's my buddy on one of the other shows here on BBS. Just Heather at VocalProfiling.com or call the office, and we can get you some information about that. We're at the at the expo in Chicago, we're going to be doing vocal profiling right there. We got three booths, and that's what we're going to be teaching people to do if you take classes with us. Okay, I think that's all of the announcements. On with the show. We have an exciting person with us tonight. Her name is Therese Topuni. She's written a book called The Promise, Revealing the Purpose of the Soul. And how many times have we talked about the soul here? Amazon gives it 5 stars, and it just won an Independent Publishers Book Award. She won the bronze medal for women's issues, and it was from publishers' recommendations about books they thought were excellent. There were 3,500 entries, and there were only about, I think, 40 awards or so. It's called the IPPY, I-P-P-Y Award, and it's from the Book Expo America. So this is an exciting book, an award-winning book, and for those of you who know Jean Houston, she has written a review of this book, and it says, thank you for your luminous, loving books. They are as inspiring as they are evocative of who we really are and what we may really be. Therese, are you with us on the line?
I am. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you for joining us. You must have a really busy schedule with this wonderful new book out. Are they traveling you all over the country to talk to people?
I've just started doing some more traveling. I did some traveling when it first came out, and then we moved from California to Florida and opened a new office for the ISIS Institute, which is our company in Tampa, Florida. So I've been opening a new company and selling the new book and doing counseling, and life gets better all the time.
This book hasn't been out very long, has it?
No, it came out in March.
Wow.
Yeah.
A new book, and it, well, was 5 stars, and I read some of the reviews. They're incredible. So to have it so popular in like a couple of months, that's wonderful.
I'm very, very fortunate and very blessed.
Well, expect some hard questions from our audience here at BBS Radio, because they are an astute group. So we're going to take some questions. We'll give you those phone numbers to call in just a few minutes, but I'd like to start with a question that I don't think anybody really knows the answer to, and I'm not being flip here. I just want to know your opinion of this age-old question, and what brings it to mind here is the title of the book, The Promise, Revealing the Purpose of Your Soul. Therese, we've talked about this on the show before. What's your opinion, perception? What's the soul?
My perception of the soul comes from both things that I've intuited in my life, things that I feel guided to in my life, and observing babies. I think those are all places to look for the soul.
Observing babies.
Observing babies. But I think that my sense of it is the old Greek word entelechy, which is something that Jean Houston talks about a lot, the fact that the entelechy of an acorn is to be an oak. It can't be anything else. And it's almost as if that's the soul of the tree resides in that acorn. The difference to me in human beings is that we have the entelechy to become human beings, but we all become different human beings. And we don't have, an oak doesn't have the choice to be a maple, for instance. But it's from the day we're born, we have promptings. And you were talking earlier about vibrational energy. And that's where I think the messages from the soul reside, in the intuition that we receive from our bodies that say, yes, this feels loving. No, this doesn't feel loving. Where does that come from? We don't have a place we can put our finger on that says that message is coming from there, but we know it is. We know that the purpose of the soul is to be love. And all of the great teachers and mystics said that the soul comes into us and goes on after we are no longer in the body. And I really believe that's true. I believe that it's a choice that we make to either honor what's been given to us naturally or to cover it up with loud noise and materialism and not ever pay any attention to what our soul is speaking to us. But I really believe that when the soul is speaking to us, if we're listening, we hear it, we feel it, we experience it emotionally.
So you believe in karma and reincarnation?
I'm not sure about the karma part. I really have trouble with that issue. And I've talked to many, many people about it, and I've decided that it's just not going to be part of what I teach because I'm not being gifted with the answer. But I do believe that our soul goes on. We're told by the mystics and the prophets and all great religious teachers that we don't die. And we know that our body dies and disintegrates and goes into the earth, and I believe that the part of us that doesn't die is our soul.
So the frequency body, the sentientness of us, is our soul?
No, that's how we express our soul.
Do you think it resides in every cell or just in one little part?
I'm not sure about that, but the more that science talks about the cell, the more I believe that's probably true.
Do you believe that every event has a corresponding frequency or a sentientness?
I believe that's true. I believe that if we were constantly aware, which of course we're not, but if we were constantly aware, we would feel somewhere in our body, in our frequency. I think of our bodies as the tuning fork of the universe.
Uh-huh.
It's like whatever comes in, we vibrate to that. But if we're so covered up and so leaden with negative emotions or whatever, we're not going to feel it. But if we make an effort to say, I'm going to stay open to that, I'm going to understand it, it gets more and more obvious to us.
I'd like to give you a real simplistic answer. Let's say, or a thought. Let's say at the point of death, someone's frequency is maybe a 10. And I just made that up because I don't really know. And maybe a positive 10 or a negative 10, but going back to neutral is probably where we need to go. And not positive and negative as in good or bad, it's just electrical potential, because our entire electrical field of frequency has a potential to it. So if we're a 10, that 10 could be made up of 5 and 5, or 8 and a 2, or 10 ones. So every experience is different, but the culmination of that energy is probably a recognizable frequency to somebody else who needs a compatible 10. You know, maybe you're a plus 10 and they're a negative 10. And getting together and performing whatever you need to do and allowing your frequencies to become combined and harmonic and balanced, maybe that's the idea of karma.
I like that idea. Is that your idea?
Yeah, I call it electromagnetic genetics, and it's how we come together to finish and balance our patterns. I'll send you a copy of it. Boy, every show we have, we talk about another article, and we need to post that one. Let me write myself a note, and I'll do that.
I think that's a wonderful thing to ponder. I just know that from my own life and my own experiences that the body and the energy of the body and the energetic body and the heart-mind, all of those things respond to whatever is coming into our field.
And it has to be frequency. We've done studies about this, and we can give people particular frequencies, like the frequency of love, which is really dopamine. Mm-hmm. It's a chemical, and we don't know whether the feelings of love cause the chemical to be dumped or the other way around, or something like oxytocin, which is the bonding chemical.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can provide people those frequencies, they begin to feel and experience those emotions. So it's like a very sophisticated big pot of math, and math is so predictable in this balance. It's how we do things like turn around formaldehyde poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about a wellness perspective, and you're talking about a soul perspective. we haven't got there yet. I just don't know enough about the soul to even deal with that. But how do you think people get off their path?
I think that they get dragged down. I think that they come into this world, and I use babies so often as an example. When you look in the eyes of babies, they are just amazingly wise, and they wiggle every part of their body trying desperately to tell us what they know before it's gone. And then we are socialized. We're socialized by our families, socialized by our schools, the climate of our world right now is divided into us and them, the very heavy energy, us and them, where you have to spend so much time deciding who's them that you don't have time to grow and experience and love unconditionally. And that's where growth, to me, growth of the soul is in loving unconditionally. And we have to work toward that. It's not a natural thing anymore. But everything in our world right now works against that. It's who's on top, who wins.
Did your book explain to people how to get back to their path?
Yes, actually, there's a whole section in my book that's exercises, visualizations, and meditations, but there's also a section on energy and how to start out feeling the energy of yourself in relation to other people and how to remember, because we all know sometimes you'll walk in a room and you'll absolutely feel like you walked into a wall.
Mm-hmm.
And there's someone there that their energy is so difficult for you, so heavy, that you almost can't move forward. And you don't really have a way to put that into a context unless you've made an effort to put that in context. There's another person in the room that you feel like you're walking into a warm hug. You know, you don't know how to put that into context either, but you love doing it.
And you talk about this in your book, that it's always been with us. You talk about
mm-hmm.
myths and how these stories are told in myths about people's frequencies and
mm-hmm.
Revenge and things that happen after death. And I mean, there's a story in the back about Inanna.
Inanna.
Inanna. You pronounce the name? So
mm-hmm.
there's a lot more. There's practical exercises. There's history. Well, you wrote the book. Tell them what's in there.
Well, originally, this is my fifth book, actually, and it was very different from any book I've written before. Every book I've written before, I planned to write it. I understood what I was going to write. It came out of workshops. One was a novel. I knew how I was going to write that. This book came to me through, it was guided. I woke up one morning with this voice saying, "Are you ready, beloved?" I mean, and it just came. I couldn't write fast enough, but time slowed down while I wrote, and I wrote things that I had not known consciously to be true, but knew unconsciously were true. And I didn't know how in the world I was going to put this book out there, because people were saying, "Is it channeled?" And I didn't like the sound of that. I liked the sound of everybody receives things. It's like pipelines from time back into time, forward in time, all dimensions of time. But we all have these connections and these pipelines. And saying it's channeled sounded like I sat in a room and tried to make it come to me, which I didn't. And I wanted to give credit to the guidance that brought it to me. But at the same time, the only way that I could explain it was through my own life. So it became almost an autobiography. At the same time, there's a whole section of dialogues that came to me. And then there's the section on how to figure out how your own path is, not my path, not the path that I took, but the skills that I learned to recognize my path. So it's meant to be a very user-friendly book on how to just be in silence and see what's happening in your life, experience what's happening in your life, and have meaning to what's happening in your life.
That's kind of an offbeat question, but when something's channeled like that and so pure, does it require less editing?
Oh, yeah. I didn't touch the dialogue, so I wouldn't dare. I was like, I didn't. Lance, my partner, is my editor. He's an amazing editor, and he edited the book, but neither one of us touched the dialogue. They were as they came.
What is the title about, The Promise?
I was, at the time, I was thinking about other books that had been written that made it seem so out of reach for people. It was like only certain people had the knowledge, only certain people knew the secrets, and only certain people could tell you how to do things. And for me, it was intimate knowledge that everyone was given the promise. Everyone was given the ability to discover their soul's path. And all they had to do was uncover it. It wasn't a matter of going to study or you know, to go to gurus. I say very often to people, I am not your guru. I'm simply telling you what happened in my life, what I learned in my life, and about forgiveness, about grieving, about love. And I'm offering that to you because I've been asked to.
Well, if you have a question for Therese Tapuni, Author of The Promise, your calling numbers are 877-876-5227. That's in the U.S. And for those in Canada, it's 888-815-9756. Direct line, 530-876-3222. And as many of our listeners like to do, you can also email us. I'm monitoring the email. It's radio@vocalprofiling.com. And if you can't remember all those numbers, go to bbsboysam.com, and they're right on the front. So if you have a question for Therese, just email us or give us a call. Therese, you know, we talk about people finding their path. Do you think people on their path are more authentic?
More authentic. I think that they're more purposeful. They're not just sort of fumbling their way through life, not really thinking about it, but thinking more about what they've been taught to think about, like get on that ladder and climb for your life. And, you know, or if you've grown up in a family where you know that music is your absolute first love and you're told you'll never make any money doing that, you need to be fill in the blank, that those people are not inauthentic, but they're not listening to themselves. They're listening to every other influence that's out there except for themselves. And they are wise. They have their own, everyone has their own wise person inside of them that they don't trust.
Yeah, I've often said that life is like a good book. There's no extraneous page or paragraph or word, that everything is important, that nothing in your life that you notice is extraneous. But, you know, people often ask, and I ask myself, how do we prioritize that? Because there's commercials that beg for money for starving kids. Do you just send them everything you have? And I've been called by the local domestic violence people who want me to volunteer, and I don't have enough time to get done what I need to do. You know, how do you prioritize where your direction is?
I think that's listening to your own body, your own intuition. When you feel like you're being pressured and your response is going to come from, gosh, I just hate to say no, I'm going to have to say yes to this, that's not a good feeling in your body. That's not good energy. The good energy is when you feel, yes, that's the one. That's the one I can put my energy in and work toward. And that's the best that I can do in this lifetime, is to you know, if you give yourself away 100%, that's not a healthy thing. You can only respond where you feel led to respond. So many of us are start very early learning how to be to respond to everybody's needs, and that's not a healthy thing.
Does the promise tell people how to pay attention to what's really important?
Yes. And mostly it talks about the fact that you need to learn to trust, to listen, to use certain exercises that I will teach you. And mostly the biggest problem that I have with people, women I work with particularly, the biggest problem that they have is they're so overwhelmed, and especially young women who have families, who have careers, who have, you know, three kids playing little league ball, whatever it is at the same time, they say, where in the world am I going to find this time that you're telling me about? And I have some really easy steps where you start with 5 minutes in the morning before you get out of bed, before you put your to-do list in your head, you think of a couple of things that you're grateful for. And you just start putting yourself in a mode when you get up in the morning that instead of being filled with stress, is filled with hope. And it's really important because we do know now that, in fact, the AMA of all people just came out and said that the only thing in the world that will decrease the production of cortisol and stress is meditation. And so then my clients say, well, that means I have to sit cross-legged on a pillow and I have to, you know, to go to an ashram or something. And I say, no, 5 minutes in the morning. Start with 5 minutes in the morning, just paying attention to your breathing.
We've also been able to help people control the cortisol here using frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also finding that people with high cortisol are very susceptible to age-onset lymphocytic leukemia. So people
they're
need
susceptible to a lot of things with high cortisol level.
So you do individual sessions with people too then?
Yes, I do.
Do you do group sessions and workshops? And
mm-hmm.
And are you available for lectures? And
I am.
How do people get in touch with you?
They can go to my website, which is Isis Institute, isisinstitute.org. And I also have on there, they can click on my monthly musings to get a monthly newsletter.
Ooh, tell us about monthly musings.
Every month I write about what's on my mind. It's a very narcissistic kind of thing. I love doing it. But I write frequently for Awareness Magazine, and I often use the columns that I do for them on my monthly musings. And just give people a few tips, you know, easy. It has to be easy in the way that people's lives are right now. They can't handle you telling them that they have to go and leave their life, leave their children behind, and go, you know, go meditate. That's not going to work.
We have a couple of questions that come in. One short. I'll read it first. My adult children resent my new boyfriend, even though their father has been dead for over 10 years. How does one learn to prioritize what's important, set boundaries, use resources and time wisely?
Wow, short question, but a lot of questions. First of all, I would say that I have been in that place. I was married for 36 years, and when my husband and I ended our marriage, it was shortly after that I met Lance, and my adult children had a lot of problem with that. And I think the best knowledge that I have about it is I had great compassion for them and their feelings, but I also had great compassion for Lance and myself. And it was, again, listen to your instincts, listen to your intuition, listen to how your body is reacting. If you're hearing something from an adult child and you feel, oh my gosh, you know, this just, I need to give them what they need, I'm the mother, you have to stop and you have to say, does that feel right? I have a life, this is my life, they have their life. You know, how much do you interfere in your children's lives versus how much are they now asking to interfere in your life? It's a balance thing. It's It's love, but it's also love for yourself.
I remember when my kids were in high school many, many moons ago. My eldest daughter's 42. And she came to me one day and she said, "Mom, how will I know when it's the right guy?"
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Hon, you won't even have to ask. You'll know. You won't even have a need to ask anybody else.
Yeah.
It'll just feel right to you."
And if anybody else tries to control that in your life, unless, you know, a good friend will come to you and say, "You know, I know that you are now seeing through the eyes of lust as opposed to the eyes of love, and you're involving yourself with a person that we happen to know is whatever, alcoholic or drug addicted or something," then certainly you need to listen to that. But if it's if you love this person, you won't love me as much as you did before. You have to be compassionate with that person's issue, but you have to be compassionate with yourself and your partner.
And learn your boundaries and your limits.
Yeah. And that is your boundary and your limit, that this is my life. I try not to interfere in your life, and I ask you not to interfere in mine. Lovingly.
And are there exercises like that in the promise?
Mm-hmm.
Great. Now, yeah. Sometimes when emails come in, I try to shorten them up, and I can't shorten this one up. I'm just going to read it verbatim. This is from Shelby. "Would you talk a moment about passive-aggressive partners? When you love them, but you don't know how to stop being abused, is there such a thing as your place in the world is one of being paid back for something you did, or just a life of learning to take whatever someone else's dishes out and how to know the difference? Surely, if it is someone's time to learn not to run over people, someone has to be the doormat to give them the experience of what not to be." Isn't that a lovely letter?
That's wonderful. I think this is a really hard-thinking person who is saying, you know, "I'm trying to understand the relationship that I'm in, but there's also a part of the question that says, I don't want to leave the relationship, so I want to find an answer to why I'm in it." And I don't think that it's ever a loving thing to make yourself a doormat, because my other option for her would be that you stand up and, in your integrity, show that person that you are not willing to be a doormat, and that will help them to learn not to abuse people. So it's like flipping the coin. Does that make sense?
So you're saying you train people how to treat you.
Absolutely. And if they don't, you don't stay there, because nobody deserves to be abused. And if they are being emotionally or physically abused, then the other person is only learning how to be more of an abuser.
That's
how can
true.
That help? How can that be loving?
Do you think she's just saying an excuse is needed here? Because if this person wants to learn that it feels bad to run over somebody, she's willing to experience that?
But the abuser is not learning that, because it's the person who's being abused who's learning that. The person who is abusing is not learning what it feels like to be run over, because you're not telling them what it feels like. You're not saying that this is not acceptable, this is not loving, and it feels bad.
So somebody won't know they're hurting you unless you let them know.
Correct.
Would you direct her to a particular chapter in the promise?
I think that I would direct her to section 4, which is the exercises, and that she get in touch with her higher self, because that's where her wisdom is. And when her body is in chaos, she can't find her right path, but her higher self will help her. And I also have a CD that can be ordered off the website that does section 4 with my voice over music by the Prague Symphony Orchestra, and it leads you through all of the meditations and visualizations.
And that's Isis, I-S-I-S, like the goddess, IsisInstitute.org.
That's correct.
Is there a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 kind of thing that helps you know when you step out of your real path, your real purpose?
I think that it's instantaneous. The more that you do the exercises and learn to be aware of your body's energy and your body's responses, the more instantaneous they are, and you know immediately when something isn't right because you feel it. And people say, you know, oh, my stomach gets all churny, or my heart hurts, or every emotion reflects in a physical part of the body.
So your body tells you.
Oh, absolutely.
Here is another question. Let me see if I can shorten this up a bit. Would you talk about the person who marries too young, has kids too young, works jobs just to make ends meet and still needs to continue to do that because there's no other choice? Help?
Oh, that's so hard. I mean, that is so many people. And it's again, starting small because you're overwhelmed. You're so overwhelmed with so many things on the physical plane that the spiritual path is almost like, oh, my God, I don't have time for that part of it. I'm just so overwhelmed. So in the book, I talk about doing it in tiny pieces. And also, it's even more important when you have children because you need to model to those children that life is not chaos. And the only way that you can do that is by not being in chaos yourself.
Have you written a younger version of this for maybe people in high school or grade school that really aren't taught values and ideals and beliefs and how to look at what they want to be, how they want to be, the kind of person they want to be, you know, I want to make a difference kind of thing? I don't see that being taught in school.
No, that's what I'm working on right now, actually, because there are a lot of wonderful programs for girls, and they're mostly school-type settings, but I haven't seen too many books that actually are how-to books. There are books about young women and their difficulties and their strivings, but there aren't too many books that I know of. And I'm certainly going to hear from people who say, you don't know about this book, and that's great. But they need to be told or shared with early the mistakes that my generation made, the mistakes that said, you know, if we really want to be our best selves, we're going to have to bury the feminine side and become more masculine. We're going to have to get more assertive. We're going to have to do this and do that. And we have given away our power. Our power is in our feminine side, in our compassion, and all those things that girls now are afraid are weaknesses. And that's why we're having a huge rise in the amount of juvenile crime among girls. So that's one thing, that's what I'm working on right now. It's so important.
I think that would be great. We'll have you back on the show when that happens.
Thank you.
There's gradations to this. Okay, if I don't pay attention to what my body feels, then maybe I'm going toward a certain location and I don't feel good going there. And so maybe the next thing that happens is I'll trip, and then the next thing that happens, I'll run into something. I mean, is there gradations to the point where ball bat in the head is what you're getting?
I really believe that that we have great guidance systems, and that if we don't listen to them and we don't pay attention, that they get stronger. I think that's what you mean. Until finally we have to get hit with something major that says, pay attention. You need to slow down. You need to. I mean, it wasn't until I write in the book, until I had some severe physical problems that I actually looked at how badly I had been pushing my body and how I had been pushing past so many things that needed to be attended to in my spiritual life. So sometimes that becomes the last wall. You know, okay, let's try this and see if you pay attention.
Is that what inspired you to write this book?
There were many things that inspired me to write this book. I think certainly my divorce and me going into a new relationship with a man who honored my work and honored my life made me want to do that work. And also, I lost my son when he was 11, and it's only in hindsight that you see trauma and tragedy in your life as having been part of your spiritual path. I wanted to share that with people. I didn't want that to be my story for my whole life. I am the mother of a dead child. And that happens to a lot of women, that becomes the story. And in my case, it was my son's death that started me questioning the spiritual path, started me questioning my faith and all those things that led me to become the person I eventually became.
So sorrow plays a part in finding a rightful path. Is there only one path and more than one?
I believe there's more than one, but there's one that leads you to your highest spiritual aspirations. And that's the one that you get the biggest emotional hits on when you're on it. For instance, when I write, especially when I'm writing poetry, I wouldn't know if 5 hours went by. I am so unbelievably in that world. And that's a sure sign that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, because it just feels so incredibly part of the universe. Time slows down for you.
Are there little steps or one great big one and everything leads to it?
Little steps. Definitely little steps. And I ask women in my workshops, let's talk about, I have workshops for women who call themselves recovering Catholics. And I want them to look at it differently. I want them to say, okay, but what about your Catholicism? Would you want to recover, literally recover, bring back to you if you could? They all talk about how much they miss the ritual. So I say to them, do you have an altar in your home? No, I don't have an altar. And I say, do you have a little table where you have pictures of your family, maybe a scarf thrown over the piano with pictures, maybe your grandmother's dishes on the table at Thanksgiving, candles? Oh, yeah, I have all those things. Well, then you have ritual. You have altars. And once they start to look at their lives a little differently, that they are putting things into their lives that are important, that have meaning, that have continuity, then they see a bigger life, not just what they're, they don't think what they do is important.
And you talk about this in your workshops.
Yes.
What would a workshop with you be like?
Well, it depends. We have, I have an all-day workshop, then I have weekend retreats, but we do a lot of, we do artwork, we do music, we do movement, we do a lot of writing, because it's, journaling for me is one of the most important things that anybody can do, because it helps you to figure out what's going on in your life.
We have another question.
Yes.
and this is from a man, Claude. How did we get so far from the truth? Probably half our population has been in the courts or lied on their taxes, lied to their spouse. A lot of us have health-related stress. How can we come back to this? How can we come back to truth as a society?
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Thank you, Claude. how long do we have here?
About 10 more minutes.
I think that it's what we've been talking about is that we're listening to the experts tell us what's truth. We're not listening to ourselves and what's truth. And we need to start with ourselves and then our families and then our communities. And we need to be absolutely true to our own truth. And that's been a really hard sell. But I think right now, I just have a feeling, and a lot of people I know have a similar feeling, that we have tipped so far to the side of untruth, of manipulation, that people can't miss it. It's getting so big that we have to see it. And once we see it, we can change it. But again, we have to start small, because we just can't change everybody overnight. We can't change the way things are overnight. But when we start seeing that for instance, in the United States, the soldiers who are committing suicide in Iraq. This has been covered up for a long time because we don't see that as honorable. And these are people who could not bear to look at what they saw because of their own inner truth, and they didn't know where to go with it. And that's prevalent in our society right now, and I think we're seeing it, and that's why Claude had that question.
Well, I think The Secret was a start. It told us we can have what we want, but it left out the idea of how do you find out what you want.
And it's not about what you want materially. It's about mm-hmm. what kind of life do you want for your children, for your family, for your community, for the world, for the planet. Right now our planet is sick. We all know that we have to do something.
And I think our government is sick. I think our election system is sick. Our health care system is sick.
Yeah. And it's one of the things that they talked about in the tipping point, you know. If enough people say, whoa, wait a minute, this is wrong, this is not truth, I'm not going to stand for it anymore, I'm going to speak my truth, enough people do that, it reaches the tipping point and we'll start to see the light instead of the darkness.
We created a computer program for this using the frequencies of the voice. It's called InVoice. And we do that on Thursday nights for people. If they have an issue, they don't know what they want or who they want to be with, we do their vocal print right on air until their voice becomes very balanced. And the idea is if their voice is balanced, so is their being.
I read that on your site. I find that fascinating.
Well, I'll do it for you.
Oh, love it.
I'm looking here to see. We got about 10 emails. I don't know which one to ask you about. I'll just ask you about one of the favorite stories from your book that illustrates what you're trying to say.
Wow. Well, I would have to say probably that, I mean, the old myths I love, but my own personal story, I think, is the story, again, of the death of my child, because the story of that was grief, and the story of that was sadness, and the story of that was this shouldn't happen. The story of that was tragedy. And by revisiting it with a great love in my heart for my son, I actually began to feel his energy and began to feel like he was telling me somehow that it was all in right order. And in order to believe that, I had to say, how can that be, that that could be in right order? What came out of that that was positive? What came out of that that was loving? And the only thing that I could come up with was that he had come here to touch us in his own way and to give us the impetus to move into our spiritual path, and that he was not sacrificing himself, that he made this choice to do this. And it was a very loving choice. And that meant that I needed to be loving in my life. And I think once you go there, once you go to that place of compassionate loving for all creatures, you can't make mistakes on your path anymore. You are always moving forward. You may get stalled, you know, but you're not ever going to go backward.
It is the promise. A way to find change your path without all the pain and sorrow?
No, I think what it is to take, everyone has had pain and sorrow. And it's a different way to look at it. It's a way to say, but that's not all of my story. And how does that fit in to my path and my promise and what I'm to do? And what I suffered in my life, say someone suffered in their life, they turn that around and use it to help other people. Because now they understand, they comprehend what that other person is going through. And a lot of people go into hospice work when they're older and they've lost a spouse or something. I mean, I've seen women, I had a woman come to a workshop who had was not expected at my workshop, and someone brought her, and when we introduced ourselves as why we came, she said, my son committed suicide a week ago. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, what is going to be the dynamic of this workshop, having this woman in her immediate grief? And it turned out to be the most amazing workshop I've ever been in. And she went out within a month, and she started programs in the school system to recognize the early signs of teen suicide. So she immediately transformed the death of her son into her path. Don't see it that quickly, that often, but it was an amazing thing to watch.
Awesome. We have a listener who wants to know what an individual session with you would be like.
Well, it's really intuitive, and depending on the person and their age and their experience and what they come in with, if it's forgiveness work is very often what I start with, because people who come in with trauma, they say, you know, I'm not going to forgive that. I'm not going to forget that. No, you don't forget it. You forgive it, because you need to release yourself from your energetic bondage to the person who harmed you. And the only way you can do that is through forgiveness work. And then we go on from there to do other work. So it's, and sometimes I do feminine visioning, we call it, where I take people back along the timeline to honor their female ancestors if they have difficulty accepting their feminine side, for instance. So it can be very different.
Do you believe in genetic memory?
Oh, I do.
Ah.
Yes, I do.
I don't find many people who believe in that. I think it's an awesome kind of thing to think about.
Oh, yeah. I figure, you know, if I could inherit my great Aunt Hazel's brown eyes, I could inherit her fear of heights. Why not?
Jean Yule, A-U-E-L, wrote a wonderful book many years ago, Clan of the Cave Bears.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, great series.
Well, I also love The Promise, Revealing the Purpose of Your Soul. Amazon gives it 5 stars. Therese, you sound like a very gentle and caring person. Thank you for being on with us.
Oh, thank you. I enjoyed it thoroughly. And thank you to all your listeners.
They will probably be getting in touch with you. Therese's website is ISIS, I-S-I-S, Institute. Is that .org, isn't it?
.org, yes.
.org. Is that the way you want them to get in touch with you?
That's absolutely perfect.
I just checked on Amazon today. The book is $15.56, 272 pages. They only have one left in stock. Dr. Tammy Brady wrote a wonderful thing about the promise. We all come to this world with two promises. One promise we make, and the other is made to us. Our promise is to find, understand, and live our life purpose. This purpose is fully entrenched in being our genuine self, trusting each step of our journey and using the talents that we each possess to make the world a better place. She's writing that about Therese Tapuni's book, The Promise. Only one left. Hurry back. Or they can get it from your site, too, can't they?
My site, any bookstore, but they have to say The Promise, Revealing the Purpose of Your Soul, because there's another book out called The Promise.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
We'll have you back. This has been great.
Thank you so much. It was a great pleasure, Sherry.
And to you listening audience, thank you for being with us. Please join us on Thursday, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, for Vocal Profiling Live. We'll be doing live video streaming so you can watch us complete your vocal profile right on the air. We'd love to have you be part of the show. Until next week.